All right, Mr. Bat, we are back in action. I believe this is episode 54.
Should be.
I think
53
it is.
Or 54?
I think it's 54. Yeah, 53 was finding your coral.
Your coral.
Man, it's, how have you been this week?
Mostly pretty fine. No, I was, I'm super good. I spent the weekend with my family in Oberstdorf and it snowed so heavy between Thursday and Sunday, like, down in the valley in Oberstdorf, there's like, 1.5 meters of snow laying. And it was beautiful because I haven't experienced that in a long time because the past winters have never been that snowy.
Right.
And I really enjoyed that. It was my little brother's birthday.
Oh,
and
that's
since
nice.
He could not have, he got 12 and
pivotal year. That's a pivotal
yes.
year.
And, my family was super sweet about it because, in this age, when you, because of the Corona situation, you can't see most of your friends all year and you can't have your typical birthday party you have at that age. I don't know.
Right.
Some joint activity plus a nice fast food dinner or whatever you do at this age. And so my parents basically set up, when it got dark on Saturday, it was his birthday on Saturday, set up a campfire in the garden in between the snow. And we would grill sausages on wooden sticks over the open fire.
Oh man, did he love it?
And that was super sweet. He really loved it. Yeah,
man, that's kind of, you know, I didn't even think about that. Especially even having worked at this school until summertime last year. But man, it must be so hard for kids to have like really special birthdays during this whole thing.
Yeah, and in general, what I also didn't think about, like, I don't know what it would have done to me not seeing my very close friends for a very long time, because it's basically mostly the same rule. So he basically can see one friend from time to time. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's hard.
Does this friend like live nearby, or what's the situation? Just
so it's Oberstdorf, basically every friend lives nearby.
That's fair. That's true. But 12 years old, what did he get as a gift?
He got the he recently has been introduced into the Star Wars universe.
Oh yeah.
And he watched the old trilogy with me, and watched episode 1 last week, I guess. And my mom made him a Star Wars cake, and instead of candles, it had little Lego lightsabers on it.
Oh, that's sweet.
And Anakin Skywalker from episodes 1 to 3, and R2-D2 as Lego figures, and got the ship with it, like Anakin Skywalker's spaceship.
Oh man, that's super cool.
Plus, he got the Zelda game for the Switch, which I am pretty jealous of.
Oh, Breath of the Wild.
Yes, sir.
I have that one, too.
I know.
You know, whenever you finally get your own
and
Switch...
And he didn't let me play it, so you gotta do it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we have a gaming day booked soon, and you can definitely try it. And I was gonna say, as soon as you get your own Switch, you can definitely borrow it. It's funny that you bring up the Switch, actually, because I told... my friend Ben, that when I finished Super Mario Odyssey, that he could finally borrow it because he has a Switch.
No.
And what I discovered was, and I'm not going to bore people too much with this because I know not everyone's really into video games, but what I find really interesting about this particular game is that there's...
So basically, Super Mario or Zelda?
If I had to choose between them?
No, which one do you mean?
I'm talking about Mario.
Okay.
So there's this, the most recent 3D Mario game for the Switch was called Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah. And
for anyone who knows like historical 3D Mario games, basically like there's like the four ultimate Mario 3Ds, which is 64, of course, which everyone from my generation grew up with. Then there's Super Mario Sunshine. Then there's Super Mario Galaxy that came out with the Wii. And yeah. Now for the Switch, there's Odyssey. And it's just an endlessly enjoyable, crazy open world kind of game. And it's really challenging and it's really beautiful. And what I wanted to say was I told Ben that he could borrow it when I finished it. And then what I realized was that I got it on my birthday in November last year. And I realized that like already over Christmas time, I thought that I had already beat the game. So, you know, you get through like the final bosses, and then with any sort of video game, you get like the toughest matches are at the end, and then you get this nice credit sequence where, you know, the creators of the game thank you for playing it, and they show some nice video with your highlights and stuff. And I thought, oh man, I can't believe I already beat this game. I was looking forward to playing this game for so long and I've already beat it. That's kind of disappointing. Like, I can't believe it was so easy. And then I Googled the game and I thought, I'm missing something here. And there's 4 alternate endings.
Oh.
So the game, it's really unique. I think this is actually kind of a great design. The game isn't built around its own ideas, kind of, or like its own challenges. The game is built around what kind of player that you are. So there's 4 endings created for whatever kind of gamer that you are. And so the first kind of ending was the one that is for the average player, like the seasoned player and the beginner. They wanted you to find that ending, like to have fun and to be able to get to that main ending and feel completed and like...
Yeah, and probably have this kind of achievement because...
Exactly.
I never was a regular gamer.
Yeah.
And what really annoyed me that I played so much games and I came to a point where I got stuck in the plot somewhere and couldn't finish a quest or something.
Yeah.
But I didn't play that often to repeat often enough to overcome that. And so there are many games I never actually finished.
Yeah, I had the same issue with the 64 even. There was like, I wonder if I even achieved like every single star of the original Mario 64 because it's so many mysteries and like secret doors and stuff that you don't find until years later and stuff. But my thing was I always just wanted to try as many games as I could. So I would just jump in, play like half of the challenges and then move on. But with this one, what I really like about it is these alternate endings, because where I'm at right now is the what they call the completionist. So I discovered how to access like what you need to achieve to get to these new endings, and I'm finally at the last final crazy mission that you have to go through to end the game for real.
Yeah, and the whole thing.
Dude, and I have never seen Mario like this.
Okay.
I mean, even if you don't play games, you know Mario. You just run and jump on stuff. It's really simple.
Yeah.
But what this final thing does, what I love about this game is that it incorporates everything sort of modern and progressive about 3D Mario gaming. And it combines that with everything that the older generations would love from like the old 1985 platform jumping 8-bit Mario. And so what this final mission does is it incorporates like 20 years of Mario into one long mission. So you're traveling, you know, into tunnels and you come out and you're the little tiny Mario from 1985 and jumping, and then you go through like another tunnel and then you're 3D Mario again and you have some crazy new task that you did in your first mission and you have to repeat it now, but it's more difficult. And yeah, I don't have to go on and on about it, but for those who enjoy, if you enjoy gaming and you like the Nintendo games, man, Mario Odyssey is just spectacular.
Nice. But that reminds me of, I don't know if this has been a thing for you growing up in the States, but when I was around the age of my little brother, like between 10 and 13 or something, there was this thing about books where you could choose the plot, basically. So after, I don't know, every chapter or after 2 chapters, there's like, would you decide to open that door or, I don't know, run away or something, then read further on page 74. If you choose to do that, read further on page 36. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Choose your own adventure books.
Yeah, but it annoyed me to too fast, because what I did is I read all endings first.
Oh no. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's awful.
I don't know, but because I always had this thing, and I don't do it anymore when I read books. But until I was, I would say 16 or something, what I would do is before I start a book, I would read the last page. Only the last page of the book.
Really?
Yeah, and then start from the beginning.
Can you tell me a book where you read the last page and it encouraged you to read the book?
Yeah, sure. Like basically all Harry Potter books.
Wait.
As a child?
Wait. Come on, man. Like, I can understand when you come up to like a classic book. I think I even did this when I was maybe 15 or something with Catcher in the Rye. Yeah. I think I looked at the last page, and yeah, if I liked how things, you know, whoever these people were, if it summed up in a way that I thought was kind of cool, then I would read it. I think I did it with that book, but with Harry Potter, man, it's an anthology. You know, the whole book is like, will he overcome this obstacle? And then you read the last page and it's like, now that we've overcome this obstacle, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought about this, and I think I was always a guy who's more interest in the path somewhere than the actual outcome.
Is that the same for movies as well, or just books?
Just books, because I didn't have the chance to develop that, because back then you didn't really have that easy skipping options that you have nowadays with Netflix and Amazon Prime or Disney Plus or whatever. Mm. And so it would be more difficult to, I don't know, watch the last 30 seconds and then start, you know what I mean?
You're right. You'd have to like, I don't know if you still had VHS when you were young. Sir. Yeah, yeah. So like having the little like gray and black lens, like,
yeah,
and then going back like.
No, I didn't do that. Only with books. And I also did it. And like, it's also a series, but where I really liked it was Game of Thrones, because there were so many, like the plot has so many, without spoiling anyone who intends to read it still, but in every book there are so many unexpected plot twists and whatever.
Right.
And
so many characters.
Yeah, so that would tease me even more to read the rest.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, if I had to analyze myself as a reader, I think I did this sometimes to encourage myself more. When I read longer books, thicker books, to read all the way through very fast,
yeah,
because maybe find this one detail on the last page, and I may probably know what the book is all about, and I immediately wonder, okay, how does it come that we end here?
Did you guys?
And so it would tease me even more, and so I would, and so I was even more encouraged to power through all of the book.
I can understand that. I can understand that. I mean, I think every kid or every person really in general needs their own different motivations to get through a book, like whether or not they think they have to read it for some reason or because they know that it will make them feel better if they do. For me, reading books completely goes in waves. Sometimes I find a book by someone that I really want to read and I just burn through it, man. Like, I burn through it. I think the last two books that I read so passionately was in 2018 in the summer. I read The Circle by Dave Eggers.
Mm-hmm.
Man, what an incredible book. I'm sure it's also great in German because the story is so cool, but no. In English, the terminology and it's like really good sci-fi. And when sci-fi is cool like that, I can really, really get into it. Like Fahrenheit 451 or things like that. I can really, really love it. Kurt Vonnegut. I bought some new Kurt Vonnegut books. I'm really pumped to read.
Nice. But if you're down for it, I think that would make for a great artsy fartsy topic here.
Mm-hmm.
Like growing up with books in America versus here in Germany. And this could be pretty interesting because besides like the film industry, Germany traditionally has a very strong book market and history with great authors.
Yeah.
So it's not like, okay, basically with movies, we watched most of the same stuff because most of those movies came from America.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So do you mean like, you want to talk about what kinds of books that I got into as a young age and what books you got into? Like what was exposed
yeah,
to?
Yeah. And what were like trends that, I don't know, kids would like, many kids would read, etc. You know, those kind of things, like,
right.
Because there are always books like, okay, every 7 year old or no, maybe 9 year old or whatever has to read this and that and whatever. Right.
I feel like everyone in the whole world read the Harry Potter books, of course. That's still so popular. It's unbelievable.
No.
So I read all of those. For me, actually, I saw the first Harry Potter film first. In England, they call it the Philosopher's Stone, but we had the Sorcerer's Stone.
Ah! Because I watched the first movie a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and I also read the book in English once,
mm-hmm.
and the book was called Philosopher's Stone,
mm-hmm.
but the movie was called Sorcerer's Stone. So that's the British English versus American English
right.
thing. Okay, because I thought, why did they change the name for the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
I had never, ever, ever heard of Philosopher's Stone until long after Harry Potter had gone on for years already. So I saw it online or something somewhere and was like, what is this? I saw that film first and then I got jazzed about the books, man. I remember going to the stores with my mom like really early in the morning as soon as, I think it was when Order of the Phoenix came out, the fifth book.
Yeah.
Man, I ran to the store first thing, and what's the sixth one? Is it Deathly Hallows? Or is that
yeah?
What's the
no?
That's it's the seventh one.
That's what's the is it called the Half Blood Prince?
The Half Blood Prince. That's it. Yeah. Man, I was so obsessed with these books. It was so crazy. No. So I think everyone read those, and a lot of the girls at my school read the Twilight Saga, but I didn't get into that at all.
But that is basically a German story, isn't it?
Twilight, isn't, is that German?
Isn't the author a German? I gotta look that up.
I thought it was an American woman or a British woman.
Or do I miss things up here? Because
who's the author?
Oh no, she only has a kind of German name because she's called Stephanie Meyer.
Ah, that's a very German name. Yeah, that's true. Stephanie Meyer.
But she's American.
Okay, so it's like Stephanie Meyer. Oh man. Yeah, I was trying to think of like, well, you know, I wanted to ask, there's this one cool thing that they did at my school when I was really young, when I was in elementary school, and it was to try and get all the kids my age to read more. And it was this motivational technique where they asked all the kids if they read a certain amount of books from the library, you would have a stamp card. And when it was marked to a certain amount, then you could take that stamp card and exchange it for like a voucher to, you know, whatever restaurants participated. So I remember one time I read whatever X amount of books in elementary school, and then it gave me like a stamp card for Pizza Hut, and I went mm-hmm. and got, I don't know, some cheesy breadsticks or a small pizza or something with my mom. But did you guys have anything like that? I mean, I guess you guys
we had that, but not that American, so you would not get
food.
you wouldn't get a pizza or something. But
you missed out, brother.
You would get like a funny looking pencil from your teacher or something.
We had that too. That's true. Yeah, I like the every week, like the end of the week reading rewards were kind of like, you know, the long bendy eraser. With the really long, like foot-long bendy eraser, or like a slinky, or some cool like mechanical pencils with crazy colors or something. But But then, I don't know, then they, I forgot what the program was called. They did it for years, but yeah, you would read X amount and then you would, yeah, then you would get some sort of voucher for the town participated, but.
No, I don't remember that many reading activities in elementary school because I was kind of a reading nerd in that age. And my mom thought about that I would skip first grade because I could read before I came to elementary school, and I started the first Harry Potter book before I got to first grade.
You were reading first Harry Potter at like 5 years old?
Yeah, I started it.
Wow, man.
And so I wasn't really into what what we were given by our teachers, etc. But there were all of these things to make the kids read more.
Dude, man, this is crazy to hear that you were reading Harry Potter at 5 years old. I mean, I was at this school working with year one, who was 6 years old, and teaching these kids the alphabet. That's so crazy. Oh, I mean, your mom's a teacher. That probably helped a lot.
Yeah.
And you did lots of drugs. I mean, you must have gone through so much drugs as a five-year-old to read Harry Potter. No, I'm kidding.
Dude, it was super hard. Imagine me reading the German book, but in the German book, it's still Albus Dumbledore and Mrs. Dursley.
And what about me, a Hermione? German kid,
yeah, no, she's called Hermine, which is a German name in the German book.
Interesting.
So a lot of these Harry Potter names, like more ancient English names, work pretty good in German. But titles like Mrs. Imagine a 5 year old German kid, Mrs. Dursley.
Oh man, yeah, the Harry Potter characters have so many weird names too.
And when I was reading the fourth book, I was asking my mom, "What is a teenager?" Like a teenager.
Oh, they said because, teenager in the German book.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Didn't expect that.
And because it for as a kid, it could translate to like tea is tea.
Yeah.
And naga is like, what do you call it? Like mice, rodents, is that the term?
Like rodents.
Rodents, yeah.
T-rodents.
I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Oh, man, that's
crazy.
But
the mean thing was that my mom was also a big Harry Potter fan, but she had the big advantage that she already has learned English to a proper level.
Right.
And the English books were always coming out way before the German books.
Mm-hmm.
So I was waiting for the German books while she has already read the book. And my mom, to the day, regarding books, shows and movies, is really bad at not spoiling you.
What do you mean?
Like she's, you mention a show which you maybe intend to watch, or a movie or a book you intend to read. And she's like, yeah, I've read that. It's where at the end this and that happens, and but it was not that cool because of this character's main goals, etc. And I was like, Mom, I wanted to read that book.
Man. Oh God, that's so funny.
Mom, if you're listening, I think this is the first time that I have to say something negative about you, and I'm sorry, but this is something that can be hard.
If it makes you feel any better, Mrs. Batscheide, this is the first negative thing he's ever said about you. But you know what's so funny is my mom is great at not spoiling, and I love that she loves watching movies, and she watches all the movies. I mean, she has definitely seen, I don't know, 10,000 more movies than I will ever see before I'm gone, and I'm really impressed by it. She watches every movie, good or bad, and she always has an idea if she likes it or not. And she always gives me recommendations, and I try to do the same. I try to remember to think, have you seen this? And usually she's already seen it. So, but she never spoils anything. And the cool thing is, or the funny thing is that Ify's parents are the exact opposite. So they're closer to what your mom does, but they are way, way worse in the way that let's say you suggest something like, let's say you haven't seen Forrest Gump, right?
Yeah.
You say, oh, have you guys seen that Forrest Gump movie? I was thinking of checking that out. Well, her dad would go like, oh, yeah, Forrest Gump. Yeah, you know, that's a good movie. You know, there's this crazy scene in the beginning. You know, he's a crippled, right? He's disabled. And he's running away from these bullies. And then all of a sudden he's running and these shackles come off. And then he's just running really fast. And they're like, run, Forrest, run. And he's running so fast. And then, you know, what's really crazy is he gets older. He goes in the military, right? And there's this awesome scene where he's in the military. He's in Vietnam, right? So he has this friend, this black guy named Bubba. So Bubba and him, they make this shrimp company, right? Because Bubba loves shrimp. And basically, they go through Vietnam together. Well, Bubba doesn't make it, right? Forrest saves him. But that's a long story. The best scene is when he saves, you know, Lieutenant Dan. But Lieutenant Dan, see, he loses his legs. And that's so hard to see for Lieutenant Dan. He's not happy about it. But later, at the very end, he does get the titanium legs. You know, he does get his legs, but he gets married. Well, you know, Forrest does marry Jenny, and you know, that's his longtime lover.
But she's a real bitch,
dude. And then she had AIDS, and then she died. But they have a son together, and it's like, dude, you have just told me scene for scene this entire thing. Sometimes I have to, like, he'll tell me about shows that I'm not gonna watch. Like, he tells me about German shows that some of them are good, like Jerks, I hear is a really great German show. And he will tell me about scenes from Jerks, and I tell him, like, he'll say something, it's great, and I'll say, yeah, you know, maybe I'll get around to it. I don't want to be rude and say, like, I'm not going to watch it. But sometimes he'll say, oh, you should check out this show, Jerks, and I'll say, yeah, I've heard it's really good. And then he'll just tell me, like, scene for scene what happens in the whole, and I'm talking, like, a 30-minute episode, he'll take 30 minutes telling me what happened. He'll tell me the dialogue. He'll tell me his favorite moments. It's unbelievable, dude. It's unbelievable. It's such an old person thing to do.
But I'm surprised that he watched Jerks.
He does spoil things way too much, but I have to give him props where he deserves it, and that is he will give everything a chance with a very open mind if you recommend it. And I love that. I love that. If Efi and I saw a movie... the only thing he doesn't watch is horror films. There's like 5 or 6 great horror films that are much deeper and more intellectual than just slasher movies, but he won't try those. He doesn't do that. But I don't know, for example, there's this amazing movie with Frances McDormand called 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, with Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell. It's a masterpiece. It's great. But it's really intense and it has a lot of risky content. And we recommended that to him, and he watched it. He loved it. Efi likes Jerks. She's working on a show right now that's kind of the similar, like, dirty ideas. And she recommended Jerks to him. He loved that. And she recommended this Kumail Nanjiani film, The Big Sick, which is another really amazing romantic movie. Mm-hmm. And he loved that, too. Like, he really goes into everything with a very open mind and... I have to respect that, but he does spoil it. If you haven't seen it, he will tell you everything that happens.
Nah, that's bad.
It's really crazy. But when you, like, so, yeah, you're...
Let's get back to the books.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you've got almost, you're almost 10 years under me. Not quite, but almost. So there must have been, like, another wave of anthology books that followed you guys throughout school, right? Other than Harry Potter and Twilight. Game of Thrones, I guess.
Yeah. Game of Thrones came kind of later for me.
Yeah, same. Which was... I didn't even check it out till the show came.
Yeah, which wasn't even a bad thing because I wouldn't recommend it if there's anyone listening who doesn't know Game of Thrones and probably has kids. I wouldn't recommend Game of Thrones probably until the age of, I would say, 14.
The books, you mean?
Yeah. Because you still gotta you tend to forget that like the books compared to the show are even more explicit regarding
sex, topics and like violence and
yeah,
it's really intense. I mean, the show is enough. The show is already I mean, the show is basically like NC-17. I mean, it's really insane how vulgar it is almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good storytelling up until that last season.
Yeah, but regarding kind of book series that were more up to date because, yeah, basically the first, so the Harry Potter, I still had, because I was so young, I still had to wait for the last 2 books.
For Harry Potter, you mean?
Yeah. But I was not a first row reader, like from when the first book is nearly as old as I am.
It's very
but
old
what
now.
What was more kind of the state of the art regarding book series and this kind of in this kind of sci-fi or fantasy, rather fantasy genre, was the was Percy Jackson.
Oh yeah, Percy Jackson. I remember that they turned that into a movie, but I didn't see it.
The movies they did with the first two, and they really sucked. But the books are great.
Percy Jackson. Wasn't there another one too, like Artemis Fowl?
Artemis Fowl was also great, yeah. But I got into Artemis Fowl because my dad was a huge fan.
When did that one come out? Like 2010s?
Let me check.
There was Percy Jackson, Artemis Fowl, and there was the Fantastic Beasts series. But that wasn't, okay, like, was that a book too, Fantastic Beasts?
No, that was just a movie. Oh, the Artemis Fowl movie came out this summer.
But it bombed. It had Colin Farrell in it. I remember the promo for it. And then I went to Prague on a weekend getaway before Christmas, and it was already playing on HBO. It was already like on TV release, which is not a great sign.
So the books, they are not that younger than Harry Potter. The first one came out in 2001.
Oh, okay. So that,
and
all
the
right,
third
the
one,
time.
Artemis Fowl, the Secret Code, earned the Deutsche Bücherpreis, German book prize.
Yeah.
And worldwide, they sold 25 million copies, and it was translated into 44 languages. So that was also a huge success and a big thing.
Did you have a book that you read as a teenager, or since you were reading Harry Potter at 5, maybe you read this when you were 8 years old, I don't know. But did you have like a book that was like a huge turning point book for you, like a book that wasn't necessarily part of an anthology, but a book that stood out to you that for some reason maybe you liked the cover or you heard something about it and you read it and no one else around you was reading it that you just got really, really into?
Yeah. I got to think about it because I got the issue that
I'm sure there's more than one, but
yeah, there is more than one, and I don't know how it came, but I was a heavy reader from a young age until I was, 14 or 15. And for a few years, my mom and me would go to the library like every 2 or 3 weeks, and I would grab 3 to 5 books and read them.
That's cool.
But then in my teenage years, I don't know, I really had this... Maybe it's a typical teenager thing.
Yeah, you start to push away from the childhood
stuff. Stopped reading for like 2 years or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But one book that really changed things for me that nobody else read. Huh. Do you already have one in mind?
Yeah, there were two books. Yeah, there were two books that I read that I didn't have any. I didn't have anyone else in my peer group who was reading it or had read it from my school group. Like,
no,
I had when I was in high school. I had a friend who was basically 40 already, and of course he knew this stuff. He was my friend Todd, and of course he was cultured and he'd been around and stuff. But I also think my friend Cody is very well read and really, really intellectual guy and stuff. But my I was a bit younger than him, and in my group of like my handful of high school friends that I did everything with, besides Cody, they didn't really get into these books. For me, of course, I think the classic for a lot of young men is The Catcher in the Rye. That book just, I don't know, man, it just spoke to
me. What?
The Catcher in the Rye.
The Catcher in the Rye.
Let me see if there's let me see what the German title is for that. The Catcher in the Rye, German title. Der Mann im Rogen.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
From J.D. Salinger. Yeah. This was just, a humongous turning point for me, this book. I think I read it when I was, I don't know, I want to say like 15, just at, you know, this really pivotal ages when you're rebelling against everything. And the book is from the perspective of kind of an angsty, lonesome teenager who hates people who put on a fake persona to get popular and doesn't get along with his teachers and has like romantic problems. And it was really, really, really cool book. I think a lot of young men should read that book. It's really, really interesting. And then the other one was my first exposure to a certain type of intellectual sci-fi. I can't say that I ever got too far into people like authors like H.P. Lovecraft, for example, who's like highly intellectual sci-fi. That's mm-hmm. maybe too much for me. But man, one of my favorite books of all time is Slaughterhouse-Five from Kurt Vonnegut. And you know, the thing is, these two books are in the probably the top 25 like most popular American classics. Yeah. But so it doesn't make me feel like special or anything to have those two. I just think that they fell into this window of my life at the most perfect moment. And Slaughterhouse-Five, the genius and the beauty behind this Kurt Vonnegut book is that it's basically someone taking place, his life takes place based on the author's reality. So Kurt Vonnegut was in World War II and he was shipped off to Dresden, Germany during the bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in these bunkers underground, and he talks so vividly about coming up underground after not knowing what was going on and like living in darkness, and then the whole city is just decimated, you know? And it's a beautiful, sad reality, but he mixes that truth. The character in the book lives that truth, but also combines it with how silly and chaotic and weird humanity is. I think he viewed war as such a weird, silly thing for us, like species, to do. Mm-hmm. And he uses that as a tool and speaks from different perspectives from there's aliens involved and stuff, but it's not religious or blasphemic or strange. It actually all kind of works together beautifully of you're kind of just looking at humanity the whole time, like, you're right, we're so weird. Why do we do these things? It really meant a lot to me. That book is really, really cool. I would recommend it.
Okay. I thought about it, and I found one or two, maybe three.
Okay. Hit me.
Like one that really was a game changer for me because I read it at the perfect moment. Because I don't know, when I was 13 or 14, I really started, and that was something that I don't know, I had a lot of trouble through regarding my performance, quotation marks, in school, etc.
Yeah.
Because I basically really started questioning everything. And there is this book by she's a Danish author. Her name is let me check that. Jan Teller.
The
books is called Nothing.
The title of the book is Nothing.
Is Nothing. Nothing in German it's nichts was im Leben wichtig ist. So basically nothing. There's nothing that's important in life.
Sorry, I just want to make something clear. Just because I know that I heard that wrong. It sounded like Jan Teller was like one name, like Cher.
Oh, okay.
But it's like Janne Teller.
Yeah, exactly.
Janne Teller. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, that was like Jan Teller.
Jan Teller. I'd have an ice cream like Stracciatella and Jan Teller.
Just because I was about to type it and was like, oh, Janne Teller. Oh, Janne. Okay, that's cool. Oh, this looks cool.
And it basically starts, as far as I remember it, there's the protagonist is a boy, like he was round about the same age I was at the time. And he mm-hmm. now already have been a little bit older. But it doesn't matter. And he leaves his school class at one day with the words, "There's no meaning at all." and really gets into this, his own world and tunnel, and questions everything. And he's like, okay, like kind of the a similar storytelling that you gave me, like learning in school doesn't lead where I want to go. No, romantic relationships do not work. All of this stuff.
Yeah.
What do I live for, basically? And it starts pretty sweet because his classmates try to kind of bring him back on track. Mm-hmm. And they build kind of a hill out of stuff that should show him that he's loved and that he's cared about, and stuff he used to like, etc.
Yeah.
But at some point, it turns out in a pretty dystopic way, and it gets pretty rough, but it's a great book. It's a great book. And it is this one book, probably because I read it. It was the perfect timing for me, because I was at the same point and was questioning so much. It did something with me. And there's more books like this. One that more people, I think, especially in Germany, know is called Die Welle, The Wave.
Oh, I've heard about that.
There is also a German movie. And that one's older. It came out in the 80s already. And it's also about so it's based on a real story that a teacher in the USA did an experiment with a class of his, but it takes place in Germany, and they in a history class they talk about the NS time, the Holocaust, the Nazi regime.
Yeah.
And at some point they get to a point where the kids say, yeah, we could never be manipulated that way the German people has been to make this all happen. And then the teacher starts to manipulate them.
Right.
And it and it worked.
Mm.
And a lot of shit started to get going, but it's I don't remember the movie that good, but I think it didn't suck totally. But the book is great.
I think it didn't suck totally.
Yeah.
This looks really cool.
Those are two I remember. There's also one that is, yeah, that's the basic answer, because it's also I just saw a few weeks ago the most sold book of the 2010s in Germany. It's called Chick. There's also a movie about it. I've never seen a movie.
Spell it.
T-S-C-H-I-C-K.
That's called Why We Took the Car.
Yeah.
In English.
It's about two boys with very different social backgrounds. And at some point they flee with an old Russian car. And also about many of those black big questions for young people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were the things. Oh,
they adapted it into Goodbye Berlin.
Yeah.
Oh,
do you know that?
I remember this in 2016. Goodbye Berlin. Yes. Yeah, this was a comedy drama. Right. Directed by Faith Akin, based on Wolfgang Herrndorf's best-selling book. The film depicts two teenage outsiders from Berlin who steal a car and go on an eccentric road trip through Eastern Germany during the summer holidays. Right. Oh, they actually have the German film Chick also.
No. That one is great.
Right.
Yeah, and there were a lot of I've read a lot of books like that, but I don't remember that many because there has really been a lot. And I've all because I started basically reading with fantasy anthologies. So that was the thing, The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings.
Right, Lord of the Rings, yeah, of
course. All of this stuff. And there's that, also yeah. one from a German author where I, as a kid, for my first time without knowing it, experienced something like a toxic masculinity, because I've always been told by my peer group that this is a book for girls, but it's just a great story. It's called, and it has also been translated into English, and I guess it's also been kind of a little success in English. It's called Tintenherz, Inkheart.
Inkheart?
It's about a father and his, I don't know, 10 or 12-year-old daughter. And the mother of the daughter basically has died, or she's told that she has at some point has gone to on an adventure and never returned.
Okay.
And the father, who's also called Mo, but his full name is Mortimer, he has a gift. And the gift is that when he starts to write, the things he describes come alive.
Oh, that's cool.
And it opens up a little bit like Narnia, probably, but it opens up this huge world. And it turns out, if I remember it right, at some point that the matter is lost in that world, etc. Great story as well.
Man, that just reminded me, like, the Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings were these anthologies that were like hit or miss for certain people. I did not get into the Chronicles of Narnia. I remember it being around, and of course, I remember the movies. But for me, I was much more into Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
you were too, though, right?
Yeah, sure.
It was really cool. I think the first copy of the Fellowship that I read was my dad's copy. Or at least it was this very, very old copy of the book. Yeah, actually, I'm pretty certain that it was his copy from when he was younger. We just had these old books. It could have been something that he bought, you know, later on, but it wasn't, I didn't go out and buy it new. I remember that we had it, and it was just these really small, like, not very well decorated, like, sort of blank white little pocket books. Just these very small. I mean, still plenty to read. The Hobbit was the smallest, but still like plenty to read. But I remember it being very small and white and just had the title on it.
But did you read it split in three books, just like the movies? Because I read it split into the original six books.
Oh, no, it wasn't
so
six
it was,
for me.
It was tinier books.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, I definitely had The Hobbit. And then it was Hobbit, Fellowship, Two Towers, Return of the King, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what I had. So originally it was six books?
As far as I know, and my father had this kind of, like, what do you call it? These boxes for like books that you buy, like anthologies that you buy in a collection, basically.
Oh, right.
Which have kind of a common layout and stuff, and it was beautiful made and like the cover art was awesome, but it was like this box with seven books, so basically The Hobbit and Lord of the Ring split into six.
Okay, crazy. Yeah, I used to love that so much. But that was also kind of a book, or if I'm thinking about it as just like The Hobbit, for example, that was another one of those books that I was reading at a time when I felt that no one else was reading them. You know, I think the big buzz of it. Yeah, well, you know, I must have read it the same time that the first film came out. I think that was, what, 2001 or something?
Yeah,
So, yeah, it must have been around the time. I was like 11 years old, so I must have read it. I must have read it then. And then, and then the other movies came out with it. So, but I think at my school, they just weren't so buzzed about reading it, they were just excited for the films. And for some reason, Harry Potter was more like the book craze.
Yeah. Yeah, probably because Lord of the Rings, the movies, are still this huge benchmark. I mean, you can watch the movies in 2021 and you see so many other movies from the 90s and early 2000s, and you really see that the special effects and everything animated looks like the 90s and 2000s. Yeah. But a lot of the Rings to the day still just looks awesome.
Oh man, all the practical makeup on the orcs and stuff, just, it's just so compelling. It's so great, man. Have you ever had like a session where you really sat down and watched all of the extended cut versions? You did?
Yes.
That's like 14 hours, man.
Yes, sir. I just watched with like Tony and I, we have this one friend we see regularly during Corona, like our one, like they call it in the Netherlands, our knuffelkontakt. And we just last week, because he comes over once a week and we make kind of a movie night, which is great for me because this is one of the positive things in this crisis, because we often talk about films and I realize that there's so many stuff I haven't seen, and I'm not really a film guy, but I start to watch movies more actively and not just for, I don't know, entertainment after work or something. And that is great. But the last week we just were in the mood for Lord of the Rings again, and we watched The Fellowship, obviously extended once again. And we talked about those marathons, and he said that he has been with a friend in a marathon a few years ago after all the three Hobbits came out, where in a cinema where they played all of the three Hobbit movies extended, plus the three extended Lord of the Rings afterwards.
Like the Hobbit ones that came after.
They played the three Hobbit movies, extended version.
Oh, and then they played the original Lord of the Rings extended.
But all in one marathon.
Was that like 24 hours long or something?
It must have been, basically. But the Hobbit movies, for me, are still a capitalistic audacity. I mean, it's 300.
I'm so disappointed with that.
It is 300 pages of a child's book, and you make basically like in the cinema cut version, you make 9 hours of action movie out of it.
There was nothing I hated more. You know, there's a few things with sequels or like readaptations and stuff that I just refuse to watch. Basically, I saw the first Hobbit one come out, and my first thought was, I'm going to hate this. I'm so disappointed. I can't believe they would redo this. I can tell from the trailer that the animation and CGI doesn't look as good as the older ones, because they just went cheaper. They did 48 frames per second. I think it was 48. And so everything looks kind of sped up and weird and hyper HD. And there's kind of a rule. There's kind of a rule about film structure, and there's a certain amount of given time that you should wait from the beginning of the film to what they call the inciting incident, which is the moment in the film where, and it's also with books, but it's the moment in a story where the protagonist that we're following begins the big journey.
Yeah.
And usually, this doesn't apply to all films. Of course, this doesn't apply to everything. But let's say, for example, for those who don't know this concept, let's look at like a classic 90-minute comedy movie. You have a guy who's down on his luck. He's getting fired. His girlfriend just broke up with him. There's something that's supposed to happen, right? He's supposed to meet someone.
No.
Let's say he meets a genie or something when he falls down a well, you know, whatever. This moment where he meets the genie and begins his journey is supposed to be around the 15 to 20 minute mark.
Yeah.
And
at latest.
That's like around the time. And that's, of course, just for those standard 90-minute films. But Lord of the Rings, of course, these longer epic fantasies that are based on books can be different. But there's still some rules to play along with. No. And in original Lord of the Rings, especially in Fellowship, they kind of play by these rules. It's not exactly 15 or 20 minutes, but everything feels like it's really structured and set up perfectly. You know that right now, Frodo's going to go. And it feels right.
Yeah. And they did a great job there regarding it's based on the Tolkien books, because Tolkien is a guy who has absolutely no problem about writing probably like 100 pages just about a green, beautiful field.
Yeah, exactly. See, he can take his time, but yeah. But people in the cinema won't take their time. And what I really hated, like, I remember I went to a friend's house in New Orleans, and they put The Hobbit on, maybe it was already out on DVD or something, I don't remember.
No.
But they put it on their TV, basically. And I said to myself, okay, we're here, we're hanging out, The Hobbit is in, let's give it a shot, you know, let's give it a shot. And they put it in, and I remember to this day that it was approximately 43 or 44 minutes until Bilbo leaves his house.
No.
Dude, 40 minutes before he does anything.
And the first movie is still the best out of
it's three. Crazy, man. There's just like 10-minute long songs with these elves and dwarfs, the dwarfs all singing, and it's so boring. It's so boring.
Dude. Yeah, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, that's the same reason that I won't watch The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, the fourth Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
I just know it will be bad, and I can't scorn my perfect affiliation with the original trilogy.
Yeah, the title of the third Hobbit movie is, I don't know if translated right, I mainly know the German title, but like the Fight of the Five Armies.
Something like was, that, yeah. Yeah. Battle of the Five Armies.
Yeah, exactly. And in the book, the story about that, like when they have beaten the dragon and the orcs come around the corner and the elves, etc., and there's this fight and Bilbo gets knocked out, that in this book, which is still a child's book, it's like 10 pages or something, and they made a 2-hour-30 blockbuster out of it. But regarding The Hobbit, there's one funny thing I've read last week on Twitter, and the guy was asking, I wonder if Martin Freeman could ever play a role where he's not a guy, where he's not a grumpy guy who gets into a crazy adventure against his will. Because he played The Hobbit. He played Dr. Watson in Sherlock. Fargo season one. And he played the guy in, what's the name? The Hitchhiker's Guide to Galaxy.
Yeah, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's so true.
Did you read that book?
No, I didn't know anything about that. And I went to see that film in the cinema in Corinth, Mississippi with my brother when it came out. I had no idea what it was. And it came on the screen and I was so bummed out because I didn't get the humor. I didn't get it. And it took me so many years later to understand what the whole thing is about. But I just hated it. And I was like, why are these dolphins talking? I didn't get it.
I mean, the movie's not that bad, but I think you've got to read, maybe not the whole thing, because the book is pretty thick and has too many sequels, but
I should give it another chance for sure.
But you should give it another chance until a certain point to get this Douglas Adams kind of humor.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was too young. I mean, when did it come out? Like 2004 or something? I must have been like a young teenager when it came out. But yeah, it was so wild. Yeah.
But another classic Martin Freeman role.
Yeah, for sure. I completely forgot that was him. Like there was years where I just didn't know that was him at all.
And in the meantime, while we talked about the Hobbit movies, I remembered one more book that was not part of an anthology and was great and kind of was a game changer for myself. And it's called, I'm not sure if it has ever been a thing overseas, but it's called Erebos, or Erebos, you would say in English probably.
How do you spell that?
Erebos. German or Austrian B-O-S. Author, I'm not sure.
I would say like Erebos.
Yeah. Erebos is basically the name of the Greek god of the darkness. But it's somehow fantasy, because basically it's a German or Austrian author, but it plays in England at an English high school. Again, mm-hmm. a teenage guy, and someday at school the changing incident. What's the English term for it?
For what?
What we just talked about. The moment where the journey's got a...
Oh, the inciting incident.
The inciting incident is that he realizes that his schoolmates, there's some form of dealing going on. Like little brown paper packages are given around. And he thinks about drugs or whatever it could be. And it turns out that it is a computer game on discs that people get. And at some point he also gets it. And it's a fantasy game pretty much like World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. And he starts the game and there's this kind of guide. So this character in the game, which you have in many games, like this, like the Luigi, basically.
Right.
But he gives the players quests. But the thing is, those are quests. It's a little bit about artificial intelligence. At some point you start and the game is pretty addictive. And at some point the character guide gives you quests for real life. And it gets pretty evil at some point.
Oh, that's a cool premise.
Yeah. It's a great book.
Did you ever get into this? I just looked it up because the name of that book, Erebos, reminded me of Eragon, the dragon.
Yeah, sure.
Book. You read that?
Sure. Tell and regarding me about young, have you not read? Have you never read it?
I remember when that came out. It was like 2002 or something. It was like prime Harry Potter,
okay.
Twilight era, or whatever. And I remember thinking like, maybe Twilight was later, but still, it was. I just thought like, oh, they're just ripping off Harry Potter with some dragon crap, and I didn't read it.
Okay. So first of all, never watch the movie. It's so, so bad.
Okay.
Funny thing about me being a pretty young reader, the author of Eragon, Christopher Paolini, was 15 when he wrote the first book.
You're kidding.
And it was already a big success.
Wow, that was a huge success, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And oh, wow, John Malkovich was in this movie. Oh, man.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it better.
Oh, man, this is bad.
Yeah, and the protagonist is called Eragon, and he's also, I think he's also 15.
Oh, that's not the name of the dragon.
No, the name of the dragon is, oh, damn, what's the name? Saphira? Something like that?
Okay.
I think it's Saphira. So it's a fantasy world basically, and Eragon, again, his mother disappears just like in Inkheart, and I don't know, he lives with, wow, it was such a long time ago when I read this. He lives with some form of relative, could be his uncle or his cousin or whatever, on a little farm, and at some point he finds this he thinks a blue stone, but it's a dragon egg.
Oh, okay.
And there is like in star, and then he becomes a, what do you call it, a dragon knight,
that makes probably. Sense yeah,
like there's a title for people who ride dragons basically, okay. In this world. And it's a little bit of a, you could, I still think to the day that it has stolen a little bit of the plot of Star Wars, because So there's a lot of other stuff going on, but the basic idea is, if I remember it right, there's this cult about these dragon knights, just like the Jedi.
Yeah.
And there has once been like one fallen Jedi who's the antagonist.
Ah, okay.
And okay. As far as I remember it, at some point there's magicians, every form of wizardry, and they gotta fight the evil guy, like classical heroic epos, but mm-hmm. Great writing on the plot to the way there.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a huge success, and I really liked it.
I saw that everywhere, but I just didn't find it interesting somehow.
Yeah.
I didn't ask questions about it. I just saw the dragon and thought, eh.
But yeah, the guy was 15 when he wrote it.
That's unbelievable. That's insane, man.
No.
15 years old. To have that kind of concept of story is really impressive. I was just thinking earlier, because you mentioned Star Wars, sometimes it really blows my mind that The Phantom Menace came out in 1999. That was so long ago. That was so long ago.
The Phantom Menace, which one? What?
Episode one.
Yeah, dude, I really struggled with the English title. Sorry.
No, no yeah. worries. Episode one.
Yeah, yeah. 99, yeah.
1999.
I just recently found it on VHS at my parents' house.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
But yeah. Man,
it's so unbelievable. That was so long ago. And for some reason, still in my mind, like every time I think of The Phantom Menace, I think, oh, that must have been like 2007, 2008. But of course it wasn't. I mean, the whole trilogy was done by then, and they were planning for the remakes from J.J. Abrams by then already.
No.
I mean, that's just really crazy. I remember when I was younger, The Phantom Menace had already come out. Maybe they were planning for the Attack of the Clones, the episode 2.
No.
And I remember being in my house as a kid in Corinth, Mississippi, and seeing a special on television. It was like some sort of, you know, entertainment evening news segment about Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the character's name that he plays in the Star Wars prequels.
Master Windu.
That's right, Mace Windu.
Mace Windu.
And I remember that they were talking about his achievements in cinema, like how many movies he had been in.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I think they said by that point that he had already been... No, that can't be true. I must have a timeline wrong, because maybe they were promoting something else he was doing, but they were talking... Yeah, there must have been something later, because they were talking about The Phantom Menace, and then they also mentioned Deep Blue Sea, mm-hmm. and they were saying that he had already been in over 100 movies.
That's crazy.
But that was definitely before 2010. And now it's been at least 11 years more.
No.
He's been in so many movies, man. Oh, man, it's going to be a really sad day, the day that we lose Samuel L. Jackson. Such yeah, sure. a legend, dude.
Sure, man.
Oh, I wanted to ask you just to slightly branch into movies but a little bit again.
One last Star Wars question: have you ever seen the original trilogy original version? So without any form of remakes on anything.
Yeah, I saw them one time.
Because we had to get introduced to it, because my parents had this kind of, again, VHS collector's box of episode 4, 5, and 6. But it really was the original version, and you would still, like in the cantina scene with all these creatures and the band, you would still see, or the Jabba scenes or whatever, you would still see the strings of the actual puppets they shot the movie with.
Oh man, I don't remember scenes. That. That's crazy.
Yeah. 17th science fiction.
I think it's so ridiculous that he decided to go back. What was it, like early 90s, right? Like 94 and 5 before they did the prequels. So he went back and like digitally.
Yeah.
Like what goes through someone's mind to say, okay, I've created a legacy that will by far outlast my own life and my own grandchildren's life. I've created a legacy and a fortune that will sustain like popular culture and has spawned, you know, fan fiction and inspired people. You know, some people probably saved their lives, like some suicidal kid watches Star Wars and decides to keep living, you know, and to do all this extremely lucky and important work and then decide to go back and alter it like 20 years later because you wanna.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me. It but just is what it is, man.
Yeah. But I think that it's still, they still made a great job because I think it was because they knew there would be coming this new trilogy. And I think they just were working on making it like a full-time experience so that you could watch the old trilogy plus the new one without those obvious differences.
The big gaps.
Yeah. And
that's true.
I've heard an interesting take about that on, I think it was that podcast, because one of the very first podcasts I listened to, like in 2013, 14 or something. So at the time when you would just, or at least for myself, you would listen to like two or three podcasts you would casually find on iTunes.
Yeah.
And there already was this one German Star Wars nerd podcast. I think it was called, I'm not sure if they still do it. It was called Antenna Alderaan. And they once had a take about what would have happened to Star Wars Legacy if they would not have continued it in the 90s.
Oh, what did they say?
Yeah, because as far as I remember,
it's an interesting question.
There already has been kind of a phase after the release of the first trilogy. And I'm not sure historically if it was immediately after we released or like 5 years later or so, where it wasn't that popular.
Mm.
Like people who were interested in film would really appreciate like this big move to do such a movie. But there was not this huge fan base.
Right.
And that somehow this take was that that the idea in the 90s was, okay, it definitely is worth to pimp these old movies because the ideas are so great. If we take this to the digital age and also bring out original new movies, like the prequel trilogy, we can make this
like reintroduce it to a new audience.
Exactly. We can catch a whole new generation and basically build the legacy out of that.
I mean, it was definitely like whether or not people love or hate the prequels, which there is a lot of interesting theory about your love or hate for the prequels being based on your age, which is kind of an interesting thought.
Yeah. Like we grew up with the new trilogy.
Exactly. I really don't hate them at all. And there's a lot of people that do, but
yeah. And on that podcast, what they say, one guy, his take was he compared it to, he said, if they would have not done the new trilogy and the remake of the old trilogy, he doesn't think the old trilogy like the legacy of it would not have become something bigger than probably like the Matrix trilogy. Still great movies in the great trilogy. Okay, Matrix in the third one I don't like it that much, but I think. But yeah, still, like this trilogy, and for this, for one decade, it's this iconic, state of the art trilogy, but not this this huge hype over generations that creates so much buzz around it and grows a fan base of billions of people.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So yeah, yeah. But I can also not understand the hate of the new trilogy. Like now there's even a newer trilogy, like 7, 8, 9. And now I'm the guy who hates this trilogy, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that trilogy at all. The only thing I like is Adam Driver, but just because I like him, but I don't like the story. Yeah. I don't like the storytelling at all.
Yeah. I like Oscar Isaac. Great actor. Yeah, the only
There's some movies with him that I'm not so jazzed about, but I think he's good in Star Wars.
Yeah. And I don't hate it because I don't know, I'm a conservative Star Wars fan who said, okay, enough is enough, the story's told.
Right.
But I think there would have been so many, because that's what The Mandalorian is showing right now. I'm a huge fan of The Mandalorian.
I still have to start that. Oh my god.
Oh. You it takes you one or two or three episodes to get into it, to this kind of new storytelling, this more relaxed storytelling, like there's not coming a stormtrooper around the corner every 90 seconds.
Right.
to shoot anywhere but not on his opponent, but it's a more relaxed way.
A poorly aimed stormtrooper.
Yeah, exactly. and that's what I see with the newest trilogy. Like there would be the potentials for great stories, but instead they made money out of old testimonials.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Like the only good really new movie in my mind or in my opinion that came out was Rogue One. I really liked that one.
I've heard great things about Rogue One, but I didn't see that.
You didn't see it?
I know, it's so
we got to watch that one.
Yeah, I would watch it with you.
I never thought you could make a good movie that that connects episodes 1 to 3 with the old trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it plays in between.
Oh, okay.
Especially when you do it right now. But it's a good one. It's a pretty, pretty good one. I really liked it.
So Rogue One takes place between the prequels.
Yeah.
Ah, that's cool. And what about Solo? Did you watch Solo?
No, I didn't watch that. I watched like the first 10 minutes and then I fell asleep.
Okay. Yeah, we should try and do like a Rogue One Solo night, like a Star Wars night. But with that, my friend, I think I have to call it. That's all right for you.
Easy. We're talking about so many books and movies.
It's been a great episode. It's been one of my favorites in a while. It's
and like, I would
I
like
love to, talking about pop culture.
Yeah, and I would like to ask people, probably from with similar backgrounds to ours, but even more with backgrounds from totally other cultures. You could hit us up on Instagram or write us an email. We'll name the address in a second. And tell us your stories about what books were the hot shit in your generation, in your cultural group growing up, etc.
Yeah, go ahead and tell them where they can write us about it.
Yes, you can DM us on Instagram at artsyfartsymigress, or you can send us an old-fashioned email to podcast@m945.de.
That's right. And thank you guys so much for listening today. If you enjoyed today's show, please go to wherever you're listening to this show, perhaps on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating or a review or a comment, or just share it to a friend. It really helps us. It really helps new listeners find shows like this. So if you enjoy it, spread the word, my friends. May the force be with you. Also, if you want to support our show, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince, and there, for as low as $3 a month or even a one-time payment, you can send Mo and myself a little cash on the side. We can use that to save up for new equipment, maybe use that for more video content, and hopefully down the road, some merchandising. But my friends, it's been an amazing episode. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
See you next week in the land of Mordor, where the shadows lie.
That's right.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.